Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. You found it. I sure am glad you did. Today, folks, is a pre-record, and we do that when our guests are on another continent. You know, they're in Europe or England or Australia or someplace, and the whole curvature of the Earth and time zones and all of that. It's just easier. For a couple reasons, actually. Number one, with the time difference and everything. We don't want somebody to have to get up at, 2 in the morning or whatever to do the show. And it's just so it's easier to pre-record it. And the other being is our software, man. Our software just, it doesn't sound that great. And when we try to hook it directly. And there's the cost, too. Somebody calling in, connecting from, Australia or someplace. And we're sitting here chatting away for an hour that, the meter's running on that. It gets real expensive. So it's just easier to do it via Skype and pre-record it. So that's what we did. I sat down with Neil, metaphorically speaking, with Neil Fitzsimon of Fitzsimon and Brogan. They have a brand new album out. It's actually out today. So I sat down with them before the album came out. It's a really good album too. Big Blue World is the album. And we just had, me and Neil had a lot of fun on this show talking about the album We're birds of a feather, let me put it that way. Both big sci-fi fans, and we like a lot of the same types of music, and we just had a ball, talking and whatnot. So very, very good, and here is that. Hand it off to that, I need to thank the fine folks over at MTS Management and Record Company there for putting this all together and making sure this all happened. If you need help on the PR side of things, getting the word out about whatever it is you're doing, if you're in a creative business, a band or independent filmmaker or something, and you need help on the PR side of things, well, MTS Management are really, really good at what they do. And you need to get a hold of Mike Stover and the fine folks over there and get them in your corner, man. They're good people to know. And so make that happen. We have a link up on our show page to them. And, like I said, it's funny because PR people, it's weird. Sometimes I tell people this, if especially creative types, creative people in creative businesses sometimes aren't as savvy as other types of businesses, we'll say. And, they think nothing about hiring an accountant to handle their money. But when it comes to PR, we'll just do it ourselves. Well, no, you won't. you may try to do it, but it won't be done well. Hire the right people to do it. And MTS is very good at that. So, like I said, there's a link in there, and I really appreciate them putting this all together. Okay, without further ado, here is the show with Fitzsimon and Brogan. Really, really good. You're going to freak when you hear their music. It's so good. I'm such a big fan. Here it is. Enjoy.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Neil.
Oh, hello there, Jamie.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
Good, 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 good. Let me just check this and make sure it's recording. Yep,
that's
it is. Cool.
That's right. Great.
So how are you, my friend? Good?
Yeah, I'm fine. You? How are you?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's nice. Nice sunny day down here in Florida.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's quite sunny here as well.
Well, we'll see. There we go.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Neil, very, very cool, and I'm so glad to talk to you. I love your music. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
I've been listening to it all week long and whatnot. So,
All right.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, you and B. Brogan, Neil Fitzsimmons and B. Brogan, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
How'd you guys, you guys were in a band, right? Pretty Blue Gun?
Yeah, we were in a Pretty Blue, a band called Pretty Blue Gun. It was back in like the early noughties, that we were signed to an indie label that got funded by Sony.
Nice.
And they spent quite a lot of money on us, but they absolutely just blew all the money that Sony gave them. So by the time our album was coming out, there was no money left. And in those days, really, you needed to the only way really to get your music heard then was to get it onto the radio and for people to go into shops and actually buy it. And of course, that didn't happen. So we had to we fought a 16-month legal battle against them. Our stuff had been playlisted and nobody could buy it, which was a pretty horrible situation.
Oh man! You know, I bet that similar situations, I'm sure, happen quite a bit. That doesn't seem like a strange thing. Just mismanagement and money, you know. And the artists are the ones that get really screwed in that deal, you know.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, we had a chance to go to another label were interested in us when we had all these problems, and it was ZTT who were run by Trevor Horn. You know, he did the Buggles video, killed the radio star. He produced Frankie Goes to Hollywood and ABC. But as soon as they showed an interest, our old record company said, "Well, if you give us £75,000, you can have them." And of course, that cooled their interest somewhat.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Greedy. Just greedy. Yeah. Going, you know, oh, man, that's a bad deal. Well, I'm sorry that happened, but at least you and Bree met. So there's a silver lining. And,
that's right.
It seems like you two work well together.
Yeah. I mean, we were actually in the band together. She came to an audition a few years before that. Mm-hmm. And then after 2 years of being a singer in the band, then me and Julie actually became a couple. So
nice.
Well, in a band, it's not an ideal situation, to be quite honest, because you've got to be very careful about the other three blokes that were in the band with us. But we always seem to be able to maintain that, you know, like a professional thing. You're just there to do a job, really, and you can't allow that to come into it. But, we work really well together, right from when I first met her. When she first sent me some of her music, some of her singing for an audition, I phoned her and told her I thought it was great, and then she said, "Oh, actually, I'm too nervous, I can't come." And I said to her, "Don't be so ridiculous." So I got her to come along to see me before the actual main audition, when there was going to be about another 15 girls, and I ran her through the song to give her a bit of a head start. And she was the best one by far. So it just shows you sometimes those people are a little bit shy and retiring. They're worth persevering with.
Oh yeah. It's like those old stories of Jim Morrison from the Doors when he first started, and too embarrassed to face the audience. You know, who knew what was laying in that package? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You just can never tell.
Right. That's cool.
On your lips, think of all the things you've tried to fix. You'll end up giving yourself in vain. Now we know that love is unkind. Keep on searching and we may find that it could break our hearts in two.
What a good track. Oh my gosh, I really, really dig that. I told you guys, really, really good. That's called 1 Minute Every Hour by Fitzsimon and Brogan, and it's just fantastic. It's actually performed by Pretty Blue Gun, but yeah, they wrote it. Fitzsimon and Brogan wrote it. It just shows it's indicative of their, what a songwriting team. I love it. I love it. Okay, now back to the interview. Well, let me ask you, you play guitars and you write the music. So were you always a guitar guy, like growing up? How did you come about getting into guitars?
Well, my main hero as a guitar, the person that made me want to get into guitar playing was Mick Ronson.
Played with David Bowie.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I just, I'm still in his fan club and I've got the T-shirt.
Nice.
So I got into that. But I primarily took up the guitar to become a songwriter. I wasn't that interested. I mean, I was into, you know, I loved Dylan and the Beatles and everything. And I was always, when I was like a kid, I mean, like a little kid, I was always interested in who'd written the song.
Right.
Because I thought that, well, they're the brains of the outfit. You know what I mean? They're putting the words into people's mouths. So that's what I did. But then as time wore on, you know, I picked up more on the guitar. But for quite a long while, I was just doing the rhythm guitar. Well, just doing, but I was playing the rhythm guitar in the band. Mm-hmm. But now I do the lead and the rhythm now, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I was always a Mick Ronson fan as well. You know, I was a little kid. I mean, a little kid, knee-high to a tall Indian, when you know, glam rock was happening, but I of course loved it because, you know, it was like spacemen.
It was brilliant. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like Bowie's first appearance on Top of the Pops. I don't know if you've ever seen that, when he was doing Starman.
Oh yeah,
With his arm around Mick Ronson. I mean, people were absolutely shocked at something like that in those days. And everything. Yeah, I loved all that stuff.
You know, the only thing that could have possibly made it better in my little kid world is if they would have rode out on a dinosaur. You know, if you would have mixed a dinosaur in there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because there's nobody around like that now, is there, really?
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
I mean, well, there's not many people that have ever been like Bowie. I mean, that's such a, like a one-off, wasn't it, really?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's weird, too, because we're at that age where all of our... Because I assume you're probably about... similar age in me. And all of our iconic people, you know, it's that point where they're starting to drop off.
I know. Yeah. Cause that was another person. I saw Prince at the Wembley Arena.
Right.
That was just unbelievable. I mean, I've never seen anything like, not only like the musical experience, but the visual thing, because we got there, and usually the Wembley Arena is a bit big for a lot of acts. They tend to suffer, but when we went there, I mean, all of a sudden, out of the middle of the stage, we were right down the front, luckily, trees started coming out of the ground and bridges started appearing from nowhere. And he turned up on the back of a limousine with Sheila E. And they were no more, I would say, than about 20 feet away from me when they were doing this stuff. No, it was just unbelievable. Then again, as you said, another one that's now gone.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beatty, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are two separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another, a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Roxgear, the online webshop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierox.us.
Hey folks, located in the hills of Tennessee, L'Apothecary Unique offers all natural, organic, gluten-free skincare, hair care products, perfumed oils, medicinal salves, makeup, incense, and aromatherapy items, bath salts, and even much more, including something special for the fellows, like beard and mustache balm, astringent, and aftershave. Each item is made to order just for you. So check out L'ApothecaryUnique.com, spelled L'ApothecaryUnique.com. L'ApothecaryUnique.com.
When we go out to eat, we never agree on where to go.
I want burgers!
Pizza!
Tacos it is.
The one thing we do agree on is we all want unlimited high-speed data. That's why we switched to MetroPCS.
Stop by MetroPCS with the whole family and get four lines with unlimited LTE data for just $100, period. MetroPCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Requires new line. During congestion, the fraction of customers using more than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. Video streams at up to 480p. No tethering. See store for details and terms and conditions.
It's just that, you know, it's. I was talking to somebody at a party about this, and I'm like, well, number one, a lot of these guys, no, not everybody, you know, who's lived the life has dropped off, but a lot of them have lived pretty hard, pretty fast lives, we'll say.
Yeah.
You know?
And,
you know, it's...
I think it catches up with them in the... Because apparently with Prince, it was an overdose of a painkiller, wasn't it? Because
he's
been suffering, I think, a lot for all the leaping about the stage that he used to do, which is quite unbelievable.
Oh, absolutely.
But, I mean, I mean, he was only 57, wasn't he? Which is, you know, no age at all, really.
No. And I'm telling you, Neil, I don't leap around stages or anything, and I wake up every morning and I'm going, where are the aspirin, man? This is
That's
bad.
Right. You know? That's right, yeah.
It's, you know, I think I peeled an orange yesterday. Maybe that was it, you know? I mean, it was...
That's right, yeah.
It's terrible. So you started playing guitar, and now was this Pretty Blue Gun? Was this the first official band you were in, or were you one of those guys that were in a bunch of bands?
Yeah. The first band I was in that were doing all of my songs, you know, that I was the main star, was a band called The Intros, and we did
that's
like
a cool name.
It was of its time, and we got a little bit of interest at the start of it, but I mean. You've got to go through that process, and it was great. I mean, to actually, you know, like to get another four or five blokes all to agree to doing your material, I thought, well, I must be doing something right.
Right.
You know, and things led from there. That band split up. Then I partnered up with the keyboard player, and we started working together. And then we sent stuff off to the NME and the Melody Maker, and they gave us a couple of great reviews.
Nice.
In there, you know, just when it was like the demo stage of it, and we got a lot of interest from record companies and like really big ones. But I think it was a bit too early, in a way. And then that evolved, you know, through a few more changes into Pretty Blue Gun, myself and B meeting, and it was only then I think. That we were in with a definite shot. I just got that feeling that we were doing something right because a few companies were taking interest in us. But actually, that band had split up. By the time we got the deal, there was just three of us left, myself, Trudy, and a guitar player. And the record company signed us without ever meeting us. They just signed us on the strength of the demos that we'd sent in, which is a bit unusual.
That's...
You know, but great, you know.
That's got to be a good demo, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah.
Anybody sitting around going, Neil, that's fantastic. Let me write you a check.
That's
good.
Yeah, it happened. We were actually having a barbecue on a Saturday night, myself and Trudy and a few of our friends. And the phone went, and it was the A&R person. And I tried to, like, push him during the week to make a decision, and I said that I wanted all of our material back if they couldn't make a decision, which was really, you know, like pushing it. And Trudy, or that's B's real name, Trudy, B had a real go at me and said, what have you done?
Right.
They phoned on the Saturday night and offered us a deal.
Nice.
You know, which was,
and so Neil was saved.
I was saved, yeah. Oh, yeah, I hadn't blown a big chance, yeah.
Right. Oh, and B was probably... yeah. You're off the hook. you were after.
Well, it was great, but the only thing about it was we had all those people around, then we didn't want them there anymore. We just wanted to sit and talk about the record deal, you know what I mean? We couldn't wait for them to go home. And then the following day, they phoned back again and offered money.
Oh, nice.
To sign with them, which was nice. So we then went out and had a meal.
Nice.
Suddenly we were in the money, you know.
Right. Call the landlord. Hey, I can pay that back rent now.
That's right.
No,
yeah.
I'm teasing. I'm sure you were fine. That's cool. That is cool. Another great track, Blue Velvet by Fitzsimon and Brogan. That was Blue Velvet. Man, I like that one a lot, too. Now back to the interview. Now, has music always been like what you've been doing, or did you have other type of jobs, you know, like normal people do, or was it all primarily music?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I did the normal thing. I've worked in offices. Trudy's worked in offices.
Wow.
Trudy's been a teacher.
Wow.
Yeah, she's done all types of stuff like that. But I would say, like, since we like got signed, and that you know, that is what we do full time now. The music,
nice.
Yeah,
nice. Well, it's great. It's fantastic. I'm a painter by trade. I'm not in the music business.
Oh, I know. I've seen some of your stuff. It's really good.
Thank you, thank you. But what I was going to say is, when you get to that point where that's what you can do and live, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
you know, go get a meal or something. It's so, you know, it's weird because at least with me, the one side, I'm like, oh man, I better not mess this up. You know, I better ride this wave as long as I can. I don't want to go, you know, wash dishes or something. But
well, you're right, Total. I mean, I think the thing is, I think it's true what they say, isn't it? If you do a job that you love, then
you're not
then
working.
That's,
right.
That's all you really need, and that. Even our job, you know, like yours, I can imagine, can be frustrating. It is brilliant.
Oh yeah, and and you're so lucky. You know, we're so lucky to be in that position.
Yeah.
And it's not just luck either. I mean, I know with me, and I'm sure with you, it's a lot of hard work too, and a lot of nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, to get there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that. We've just done a track for this other singer, and it was. Actually, a couple of my publishers now want to publish it, so that's really good for us, because I wrote the song and everything. But on that track alone, 75 tracks went onto that,
right,
to build it up, like the guitars, the bass, the drums, the strings, hand claps, bells ringing, and all that. And everything. And you know, that's for like 3 minutes of music.
Right. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, and like yourself as well.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah, you know, and it's true, because people, I know with my stuff, people see the end result, and with your stuff, they probably hear the end result, and they say, oh, he just knocked that out last night, you know, nothing was on TV, and he, no, man, there was,
stuff. Goes into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really goes into it, yeah.
Absolutely. Now, with your guys, and I hate to ask this question because it's kind of a boring question, but I'm just curious because I'm really excited about people that have harnessed their creativity and, you know, and doing it. And with you and Trudy, do you guys write together, or do you like do the first part first, you know, and get the melodies and stuff down, and then she comes in, or how does that go, that process?
I've always worked, you know, right from when I first started, like in the old school way. Well, the process is, I suppose it's old school now, but it's the one I've used all the way through from when I first started trying to write songs. It's just basically me with the guitar and then playing away until something comes, you know, that I think is going to work. And then it's always the melody first.
Gotcha.
I don't. I might get a title sometimes if I think the title sounds really good, because that does give you an idea. But it's always the melody, because, I mean, without the melody, you know, the song's not going to stand up anyway. So
right.
I go with that, and then I get the lyrics, and then I show it to Trudy, I should say B, and then she might have some suggestions, because, you know, sometimes when you're so involved in something, you can't see it yourself.
Right.
And we work on that rule of thumb that if it sounds good with one voice and an acoustic guitar, then, you know, it's going to sound even better when you add other things to it. That's the rule of thumb we go by.
That's fantastic. I have a friend of mine who's a musician and from Sweden, and he's a pop singer, and he's been doing it for a long time. And we were talking one day, and he said, look, he goes, it's very simple. If it sounds good around a campfire, it's a hit.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right, yeah. I think the hardest thing is to write a song with just, you know, people deride songs for only having three chords in them, but, I mean, that is such an art to be able to do something like that. Really, you know, it's really good. And that's what we try and go on. If the melody's strong enough, once you add other things, that's the icing on the cake, but it's got to be the bare bones have got to work.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime, and treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit makingcancerhistory.com.
Hey guys, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, last year I was on holiday with my girlfriend Danny. We were at Disney World and having a great time. It's the happiest place on earth. And I dropped my vape, just like a Butterfingers, and it was a pain in the neck. They just don't have anything there to replace it and whatnot. So we had to drive 45 minutes each way to get a new one. And, you know, that's an hour and a half out of our day, man. But anyway, that wouldn't have happened because if I would have had this fantastic new product, the C-Ring. It's very, very cool. What it is it attaches to your vape, designed to protect your investment with comfort, flexibility while doing your day-to-day activity. What it does is it goes in there, you put your finger in there, and you hold it, and you're not dropping your vape, breaking it and whatnot. It's very, very cool, and if you need both hands, they have a lanyard you can hook to, and it's awesome. It's awesome. The C-Ring, you can find out more about it and pick one up at their website, www.thecring.com. Again, that's www.thecring.com. Be smart, be like me, get a C-Ring if you're a vapor. Very, very good. Oh, and hey, holidays are coming up, man. This is a very cool gift for somebody. If you have somebody on your shopping list that vapes like I do, get them a C-Ring. Thecring.com.
One of the things I really like about B2 is when her vocal style when she sings, and it's strange because when I was a kid growing up, and you know, we worshipped you guys in the UK. We thought that would just be the coolest thing ever. You know, everybody we were sure was walking around with mohawks, and you know, girls were chasing singers down the street. It was just, you know, that was our warped view. And then I got older and I met people from England and they're like, oh yeah, we wanted to get to the States because, you know, that's where,
exactly.
You know, but one of the things that used to drive me crazy is when American singers, songwriters, pop people would try to fake that British accent. I'm like, you know, you listen to like old Ministry and you're like, you're from Miami, man. When did the British accent happen? You know? And then but it also happened on the other side too, where you'd have singers from the UK trying to do that American accent. Brie doesn't do that. She's just, here it is. It's great.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. You know, I love it.
Yeah. That's one thing we've always prided ourselves on, that she sings in an English accent. And I totally agree with you about some of the British acts. Now I'm going to say something that might be a bit controversial, but I've always found Mick Jagger's, Alabama, you know what I mean?
New
Orleans boy type things, like slightly embarrassing. You know what I mean? I've got to be honest. I have.
It's bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was thinking. You know, it's so funny. Whenever I just introduced my girlfriend's sister, they're quite a bit younger, but which is great because I introduced them to all this great music. You know, she was talking about the Rolling Stones, and somehow something or other, like country music, came up, and I'm like, well, you know, the Rolling Stones did do a country song. She's like, She's like, what are you talking about? So I sent her the video for the girl with Far Away. And it's so funny because Mick's doing his thing and the rest of the band, I'm sure they did it on purpose, but they're all like rolling their eyes at him and stuff.
I know,
brilliant.
I always found that hysterical, like with the Keith Richards and everything, just standing there like, and Bill Wyman with a blank expression on their faces. And you know, when Brian Jones and Charlie Watts, I mean, they look so miserable and he's the only one who seems to be enjoying the thing.
Right.
But I love Keith Richards. I mean, I think he's hysterical.
He took
over British TV for one night here.
Oh, really?
last year. Yeah, they gave him about four to 6 hours where he chose all the pro. It was absolutely brilliant. Things that we'd never seen in this country for years. He had that Muso's insight into all the comedy programs and different things that we had. And I mean, a lot of people were saying he should take over as the director general of the BBC.
There you go. A lot easier work, probably.
That's right.
You don't have to be on stage. But he's probably, I think, you know, and everybody, the big joke with Keith Richards, oh, you know, he's partied so hard. Well, yes, but I think the biggest thing he's addicted to is performing. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing it, you know?
Yeah, you're I mean, what are they now, about 72, 73, right. Something like that, right?
And it ain't like they need the bread, you know, no. I mean.
No, I know, it's yeah, I think they're doing gigs in this country, again, this summer.
Wow.
I think. I mean, they never stop, do they?
Just keep it going, man, keep it going. And you're absolutely right about, you know, when you were talking before, getting along, you know, in a band dynamic with other personalities and stuff. I just watched... I love YouTube for that, because I love all this behind-the-scenes type things. You know, I watch those. Yeah, it's just great. And I watched some documentary about Pink Floyd, the guys from Pink Floyd, and, you know, the drama-rama they were having for decades, you know, and it's like...
Yeah, I know, it's unbelievable. Well, I'm a big Elvis Costello fan. Really, I've seen him about 8 or 9 times. I'm really into him. And there's some backstage footage of him... In the States. Oh God, I can't remember. And I can't remember the city he was in, but it's hysterical. It really is. I mean, he was only about 22 or 23 at the time,
right?
You know, and they've got all this like new wave punk attitude, right? And they're mixing with like the American road crew, who have still got long hair and flares on. You know,
absolutely.
And they're there in like skinny jeans with Dr. Martin shoes and mohair jackets and skinny tie. You know, it looks like it is unbelievably funny just to see them. You know, so odd.
And he's brilliant. I tell you.
Oh yeah.
Whenever I can't think of an idea for a painting, and this is very true. He has influenced so many paintings that I've done. I'll put on Watching the Detectives. That track alone will pull an idea out of my head. You know.
Yeah. He's a great lyricist. I mean, I don't want to go to Chelsea and all stuff like that. They're just such strange. And I'd say, even though I love Bowie and Mick Ronson and everything like that, the thing that really, you know, started me off as a writer was Elvis Costello, to be quite honest. Because he was writing about our lives. You know, as young men, he was writing about our lives. And I thought, and it was such a, like, that angry young man thing, that bitter, like, cynical type thing, and I was just so into that. I've tried to match him on a few things, but, you know, like, lyrically, but it's very difficult to write like him.
He's an original. He's one of those, you know, I'd put him in the same pedestal as Bowie and Prince and whatnot, in his way, you know, he really...
Yeah.
There's several musicians like that, and he kind of falls into that... I won't say not recognizable category, but people are like, oh, yeah, Elvis Costello. You know what I mean? Doesn't pop into mind right at first, but Eddie should. You know, there's a few. Matt Johnson from The, you know.
I love that.
Another one.
Oh, that album.
Infected. Absolutely brilliant. And another great lyricist, you know. You're like.
The Angels of Deception. I love that song.
Absolutely.
I play that in the car all the time.
Me too.
Counting. Follow, follow, we need love.
Man, I like that track a lot. I like that track. That was Big Blue World by Fitzsimon and Brogan. Fantastic. Now back to the interview. Well, it sounds like, you know, growing up, you know, and living the life you led was pretty cool. You know, you met your gal and everything and, you know, doing what you want to do, have a good record. Now, you have a new record, right, that just released?
Yeah.
This came out this month, right?
Yeah, well, actually, the album's coming out next week. On the 22nd, Big Blue World, and a single's been taken off of that, and I think that came out today. That's the title track of the album.
Nice.
And that's been released by a French record label.
Wow. How is it working with...
They're really good. France are very good at looking after their musicians. Mm. They subsidise them a lot, much more than what they do here in the UK. And they've been really good. And these two albums, we've worked with Pat Collier, who produced Katrina and the Waves, Walking on Sunshine. He's produced this album and the second one that's coming out in October. So yeah, it's been really good. So we're looking forward to that song getting out there.
That's fantastic. Yeah, Katrina is fantastic. I won some tickets off the. I still actually listen to a local radio station. Not all the time, but sometimes. And they had that contest, you know, where you email in or whatever. And I won the tickets, you know. And it was one of these festivals where they have, you know, I don't know, like 12 80s bands playing or something. And she was part of that. And the headliner was Boy George. And my girlfriend Danny's a giant Boy George fan. And
all right. Okay.
So, you know, I won the day by getting the tickets. And... Oh, man, I got to tell you, it was in, like, the height of summer here in South Florida. We go to this concert, and it started at, like, 6 in the evening. And I'm like, and it's just filled, standing, you know, it's outside, but there's just everybody's shoulder to shoulder. And I'm like, oh, man, it's so hot. I can't. And I'm a chunky monkey, and I'm like, oh, man, it's so bad. How long can this go on, you know? So I look at my watch, and it's 7:25, and I'm going... Boy George comes on at 11. So I smiled and suffered through, you know. But it wasn't that bad because, you know, I got to see a lot of cool people who I hadn't seen perform before. And Katrina was one of those. Pretty neat.
She with the band?
No, but it was – here's the weird part. They had like – because they dropped these big banners down behind the stage whenever the new act would come on. And it was Katrina – of the Waves. That's what it said. I'm like, okay. It was a couple acts like that, you know.
I actually saw Katrina and the Waves, and they were absolutely brilliant.
Man, I'm so jealous.
They took over. There was a venue in London called the Mean Fiddler, which is quite a big venue, and we went there one night. Oh my god, it was. I've never seen that place like so up. And when they got to that, doing that Walking on Sunshine, it was just unbelievable. But I mean, I've actually met the guitarist.
Nice.
Kimberly Rue, because of course he worked with Pat.
Mm-hmm.
So with working with Pat now, who's our producer now, we've got in with that crowd as well.
Nice.
Now, so it's really good.
That's very cool. Well, see, you're hanging with the right people. That's you know, that's a good thing.
What happened was we asked the record company if we could work with Pat, because he's always been a hero, because he produced The House of Love, Belinda Carlisle, Voice of the Beehive.
Right.
I think he's done a few others. But he was always a hero of mine, and I asked if I could work with him, and they said, oh, it's too expensive. And then Pat said, actually, I'll do it for a reduced fee.
Nice.
Because he liked it. And... yeah, I mean, he's really good. He does all of our stuff now and everything. And it was weird though meeting somebody whose records you've got at home.
Right,
I found that a bit odd. You know what I mean? But now it's just You know, I spoke to him yesterday on the phone and everything, and it's, I've been out, you know, with me and Trudy, you know, go out for drinks with him and everything. So, but it's quite strange, because I remember years ago, one of my mates said to me, when we were listening to Katrina, he said that, he said that he would be really good with your stuff, you know, and it's turned out that...
And there it is.
Yeah. How weird.
How cool is that? I'm telling you, Neil, we're living charmed lives. It could be so much different.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, or it could be. Yeah, tell me about it. It really could.
Oh, man. Just going to the office job, getting yelled at by somebody that got yelled at home, you know. Yeah.
I had all that once. Yeah. Never again.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
To promote my new flower shop, I had one place print my business cards, another print my brochures, and a third, my signs. Now my roses aren't red, my violets aren't blue, my geraniums look dead, and I don't know what to do.
Staples can help your business stand out with signs, banners, and brochures that are a true reflection of your company. And now with Staples, spend $50 or more on print and marketing services and get $5 off your next in-store purchase.
Now my business is blossoming, and I'm spending less green.
Exclusions apply. In-store only. Ends 6/23/18.
Metal Babe Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at MBMMusicLLC.com. That's MBMMusicLLC.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com. Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi, folks. Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion. Fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and, of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool. And these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks. I was just talking to somebody, me and my gal, we bought our first house a couple years ago. And so, you know, I used to be a big clubber. I would go, you know, I tell people, I'm like, yeah, I went out night clubbing one weekend and came home 2.5 decades later. You know, it was one of those deals. But a couple years ago, I was living in Southern California and the economy went to hell. And I had I owned a gallery out there and stuff. And so I sold my... sold all that and kind of liquidated, and I said, I'm going to look around for somewhere new to live. So I really spent about a year bopping around the country, seeing friends of mine and kind of just getting the lay of the land, you know, and where I wanted to move to and resettle. And I visited a friend of mine I went to high school with, and I remember I was leaving on a bus after staying there for a week, and she would drop me off at the station, and I was heading out to the next place, and I was thinking to myself, I'm like, man, you know, she's got the big house and her kids are doing well, you know, and I'm like, I went wrong somewhere. I should be living like that, you know? And it was funny because I was talking to her afterwards, and she's like, "Well, you've settled down now." She goes, "You know, because I told her this that tale," and she goes, "When you were heading out, I was thinking to myself, well, there he goes. He doesn't have mortgage payment." You know, she was having same thought.
Yeah, the same thoughts back at you.
Right. And so you just, you never know. But I guess the key is to be happy with what you got, right? And
that's it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, totally right. Just be happy. That's what you got to do.
Absolutely. Let me ask you, do you, with the new album, it's going to be out next week. Of course, during this show, we've played some tracks from it and whatnot. And this is available wherever people buy digital music, right? Or do they need to go to your specific website? Or how do they get this?
It's across all the portals,
Nice.
The publishers take, the whole lot of iTunes, Apple, Spotify, Napster, the whole lot, And we've actually got a new website up now that just came live yesterday, which is fitsimonandbrogan.com.
Nice. Yeah. I'll make sure that's changed on all of our show pages and all of that. And we will get everybody over to it and whatnot.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah, I tell you, it's a crazy world we live in. A lot of people that I know in the music, it's interesting because a lot of people from the older days, the old guard, are like, oh, it's just the Wild West now and it's, it's so hard. Yeah. But again, I think it's almost kind of cool because it's, we do live in an amazing time. You're releasing some songs and people in New Zealand can hear or wherever, on the planet. It's amazing,
Well, it is, I mean, as I said, when we got our first deal, there was the only outlet was for you to get a record deal. You had no chance of getting your stuff heard anywhere without that record deal. But now, of course, it helps to have somebody behind you. It's helped us because it stops us having to do all the work. I mean, they just get on with it. But, it's great. Like, in August, I've got an interview with somebody in Trinidad and Tobago.
Wow. That's awesome.
You know what I mean? So that would never... that would have been unbelievable years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just interviewed this band, this was a couple months ago, but they were from... Mumbai, India, and it was so weird because like the time difference is it's not even a whole hour, it's like 10 and a half hours time figuring all this stuff out, but we did and it all worked out. But even us having this conversation, I mean, the cool thing about today is access, because you and I grew up, you were fortunate enough that you lived in London and stuff, so you might see somebody walking down this I lived in the suburbs of Detroit growing up, and, no, you didn't see anybody walking down... Well, nobody walked down the street, and, But the only access you had were magazines. If you were lucky, you could get a copy of NME, which you mentioned earlier, which was the cool magazine, but the ones in the States stunk, man. Yeah. They were terrible. And liner notes, There was no Facebook or any of that.
Oh, no, it was now, some people decry, I suppose the downside is it's hard to keep track of how much money you're getting off of it, but the other thing is, you'd never be able to reach all these people.
No.
That would be in the hands of the record company, their distributors and everything, and it would be so difficult to get the stuff out there.
Oh, absolutely, and it's a global market. It's a global market. It's people always ask me. They're like, "Where should I, pick up music from this band that was on your show?" My answer always first is, "Well, at a show, if possible."
Yeah.
There's always a merch table. if you are in another continent or somewhere out, you can't get to that show. Well, get it from them, or however you got to get it.
That's right. Yeah.
And, there's even Spotify. Don't steal it. No one likes that.
That's right. Yeah.
So true.
I mean, somebody somewhere in the world is selling one of our albums that we did, one of the first ones, for $75, and I've never seen a penny from that.
Oh, man.
I know. I mean, it's flattering in a way to think that somebody would like to. Would have ever spend something like that, but in a way you're thinking, I wonder what happened to that.
Right. Exactly. There's a meal right there,
That's right.
Come on.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, it reminds me of a friend of mine. I was talking to a friend of mine who's, he's still very popular. He was in an 80s kind of synth pop band. And there's still people, and you know, he's still making music and doing his thing, and there's a market for that retro stuff too. But he said he went to play in Mexico City. They got booked in Mexico City, and they went down there, and he said, you know, it's all counterfeit and bootleg stuff. And he goes, he goes, I feel bad because these kids are coming up, you know, hey, will you sign my CD? And he, you know, and he was, because he's a nice guy, but. He, in his mind, he was kind of thinking, yeah, I saw none of this. I saw none of
the bootlegs,
But, you know, part of it, I guess.
I used to hunt around Camden Market in London for bootlegs of Elvis Costello. I was terrible. I once walked all day, not walked, but I went from one part of London to another to look for a bootleg of Costello, a gig that he played at the Elmer Combo Club. It was in Canada, I think. And I went all over London, and eventually I tried the King's Road, like in Chelsea, and I went down there and I found it. One of the last shops I went to, they just put it in a brown paper bag for me and took the money, and then they looked at me as like, say, right, now leave. So I just, I walked out of that shop. My hands were shaking. But now you can buy it. Now that they've made, it became so like bootlegged that they decided just to release it officially now. But and I've actually got the CD of it now. But that was an absolute like, you know, you can imagine. I went to Oxford Street. I went to another part. But eventually, I was rewarded.
Well, that was the place back in the day. Was you know, record shops is where you would, and there was everybody laughs at me when I say this, but it's so true. No one's ever contradicted me on it. In every record shop, it didn't matter where you're at. You know, you could be in Nebraska or someplace. They'd have a record shop, and there was some older kid in there that knew way too much about all the music, all the cool music. You know?
I know. It used to be like, we used to have, we had people like that, and it was like the cool record shop where I lived. And when you went in there, and if you like bought a single and took it there to like pay for it, they'd look at it up and down and then look at you. You know what I mean?
See if you had, if you were cool enough to be into this. Yeah. You know?
That's right. That happened to me a few times. I mean, actually, you know, I've bought a few. I wanted to get hold of an original copy of the Sex Pistols' Anarchy in the UK. And I got it from this record dealer, and he was quite, you know, quite an elderly bloke. And when he handed it over to me, he said, "This is the last one I'm ever buying of this rubbish." So I thought,
"Wow,
oh, okay.
That sold." I would buy it just from that.
Just for that, I thought, well, it worked then, didn't it? You know.
Exactly. Yeah. I tell you, I had the weirdest experience the other night. I was interviewing this this guy. Kind of a neat story. He was a musician when he was younger, and then, you know, had a band in college, and life happened. And so the band went its way, you know, as those things do, and he lived his life. And now that he's older, he's, you know, probably, I would say, early 60s, maybe around there somewhere. And the kids are all, you know, grown and off. They're in college now and stuff.
Yeah.
And so him and the band got back together. They're like, hey, we can afford the instruments now. And, you know, and they're just having a good time. And I thought,
that's great.
And I thought it was neat. Then so I'm talking to him, and they play this kind of 60s music, and it's great. And it's very, you know, 60s pop. And, yeah, they're just having a good time, and it's good music. And so we're talking, so I'm already starting this interview, I'm thinking, well, we're going to be talking about the Animals, and we're going to be talking about, you know, the Door, whatever, you know, all the 60s stuff. And the first thing he says, you know, he goes, the biggest thing I learned about music was from, he goes, when I saw the Sex Pistols, and Johnny Rotten just screamed at us in the audience, "You gotta mean it, man."
That's right.
I'm like, whoa, he's cool too. know?
Really good. It's brilliant. You look back on it now, and those songs are really good. My favorite was Pretty Vacant. The guitar intro. I mean, that is just fantastic, that guitar intro.
Brilliant.
Really good.
Brilliant. It's so cool.
Yeah.
It doesn't fade, you know? It doesn't fade.
No, it never will do. No, that music is. Some of the stuff now, which I find a bit generic. I don't think it is the age. I do there was a survey. They did a survey in this country, and there was a TV program about it. That music is far simpler now, pop music, than what it was in the 60s. There is,
I believe that.
Yeah, there's not the key shifts, there's not the chord sequences, and not many risks are taken now. As where, like, you know, in the 60s, the Beatles, who I absolutely love the Beatles, they were breaking new ground practically everything they released.
Oh yeah,
I mean, if you take Love Me Do, which was released in 62, and then you go to 67, you've got Strawberry Fields Forever.
Right.
I mean, which, you know, I mean, that is just unbelievable.
I remember I had to do an interview a couple years back, about 10 years back, for this newspaper. This is in Southern California in San Diego, and kind of the cool, like, newspaper of the town. And, you know, we're meeting, and met this reporter, and she's asking me all these questions, and, you know, she was kind of, you know, looking down her nose a little bit at pop art and whatnot, because, you know, that's what I paint, you know, and I've painted, I can't tell you how many times I've painted Madonna, you know, just, but I can't complain because Madonna's paid the light bill quite a few times, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so she was kind of, like I said, looking down, and I said, look, I said, it's very simple. If I were the Beatles, I'm at the one, I want to hold your hand stage. Yes, I can't wait to get to do the White Album.
Yeah,
but I just don't have the money for that right now. So,
that's right, yeah, you know. Exactly.
You got your looks, but that won't last long. She's just a good in a gilded cage. I place a bet that I won't be wrong. She's just a good in a gilded cage. She tried to break the code of love. She tried to break the code of love. Tainted.
Simon and Brogan off their new album Big Blue World, which is out today. And by the time you're hearing this, folks, you can pick that up. So definitely check that out. Simon and Brogan, Big Blue World, wherever you buy your digital music. So very, very cool. Okay, we're going to go back to the interview and finish that up and whatnot. So here we go.
Yeah, I'm actually reading a book that about. That's got short stories all based on Norman Rockwell paintings.
Oh, really?
Did he do Nighthawks?
No, that Edward Hopper did Nighthawks.
Ah,
fantastic.
Right, so Yeah, I love that painting. I'm actually reading a book now, and it's got different... I think even Stephen King's written one of the stories, but it's based on Norman Rockwell paintings. Yeah, so that's quite interesting.
Oh, yeah. He was a fascinating guy, and an interesting guy, too, in that he would take a photo. He had a photographer, and they would kind of set the models up. He worked from photos. A lot of people don't know that. He would finish the painting, and then they would take a picture of the painting and send it off to the magazine, and that's what they would use, you know?
Yeah.
And he would have this you know, fantastic painting, and he would give them away. People would write him and say, hey, I really like your painting. He's like, oh, well, here's one, and he'd ship them the painting.
Yeah. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Now, you know, those are worth millions and gazillions of dollars. But
yeah, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, back then, he's like, well, I already got paid for it, so, you know, what do I care?
That is unbelievable, isn't it? It really is.
It's crazy. I tell you another crazy one I was reading recently. I was reading about Michelangelo. And when Michelangelo died, and, you know, you have fantastic artist and, you know, just genius. You know, it's like talking about, oh, yeah, that Beethoven was a pretty good musician, you know.
That's right.
But when he died, he had, I think they were saying, what did I read? 170 non-finished commissions that people had paid him for.
Oh, dear.
He hadn't got to them yet.
Gone round to it.
Right. So, you know, the people had to get their money back, and, oh, it was a big thing. And just crazy.
In our studio, we've got quite a lot of, I've got an original in our studio. We've got an original. Oh, it's your dog.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. There's an original. I shut my cats into the other room. yeah, I've got an original poster of Barbarella from the '68 film with Jane.
Really?
I'm into all of that type stuff. I've got a picture of Marilyn.
Oh, nice.
In New York and everything. So I've got. Yeah, we've got all that, and we've got like TV and film. Guides like from the 50s and the 40s up on the wall. So, yeah, I buy into all of it. I love that era. I just think it's absolutely brilliant.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah sorry about the dog. She her kennel's right here next to my desk, and she was, you know, it's so funny because she knows when I'm doing these shows and stuff that you know, it's quiet time. So she was laying there sleeping. She must have had a bad dream or something because she just jumped straight up and started. And it always makes me a little nervous. I've seen too many horror movies over the, you know, looking behind me like, what is she barking at, man? That's not good.
like into another dimension.
Right.
I've got two cats and they do that. All of a sudden they will sit bolt upright next to you. Right. Look at something across. I think, my God, what the hell is happening?
Exactly. Exactly. That's where my mind goes to.
That's right.
You know, it's like, that's not good at all. Oh, man, I tell you, it happened the other night. I was in here working, and my girl Danny comes in. She goes, oh, I just heard this crazy noise outside. And I'm like, okay, let me put my shoes on. I'll go see what it is. You know, doing the boyfriend thing. So I get to the – and she's like, don't go out there. Don't go out there. And I'm like, settle down. You know, come on. You know, we live in suburbia. Probably a raccoon or something. But as I reached for the doorknob, the thought entered my head – and it said, you know, Jamie, this is how, like, horror movies and stuff start, you know, and nothing good is going to happen.
When you're watching those films, me and B always say this, when they do something like that and go outside, you say, oh, what an idiot, I would never do anything like that.
Exactly. And it's always somebody like us that gets it, you know what I mean?
That's right, exactly, I agree with that, You see them going in the dark and down a darkened corridor, and I say to B, well, they're asking for it, aren't they? You know, but it's still awful that you know something's going to happen. But I find, you know, I'm such a wuss that I can't even look.
I'm the same way. I'll sleep with the lights on that night. Like, the lights are going to stop the killer. I don't know, but maybe, you know, I'm going to try.
I saw a film a few years ago, and I can't remember what it was, but it was about effects of this like psychotic drug that people were taking, and they actually sort of like fed people, but they did it in a very subtle way. It wasn't one of those like, you know, everything in your face.
Right.
It was building up to it, and I was like worn out by the time it had finished. I'd had enough.
I'm telling you.
I was just so like worn out.
The Trainspotting movie did it for me. And that came out, and you know, I'll say it this way. I may or may have not have been a bit of a partier when that came out.
All right.
But I'll tell you, I was like, heroin, never going to happen after seeing that movie. No.
Yeah. Oh, actually, one of Pat friends, and he's worked on that, he's played on a couple of tracks on this album, he had a song in Trainspotting.
Really?
Yeah. Nick, I can't remember what his surname is now, but he did a couple of the tracks. He made £1 million at that.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
and blew it. And blew it.
And blew it. Yes. That's what it is. I have found in my life out here on the planet that life is full of ups and downs, and you know.
I thought it was great when he got his first royalty check from that. I thought it was a really brilliant thing he did. He took his mum and his and his grandmother on holiday to Portugal for a month.
Wow.
I thought that was a brilliant to do what he
That's
did.
That's awesome.
But, and it's really like English to do something like that. He didn't go out and, you know, like party with all the girls. He actually just took his mum and his grandmother away. Which, but
he partied
been,
with the important girls first.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
good. Yeah. But he went through it though.
Yeah, he's still working there now. But I mean, what a great! I mean, that is why that is such a holy grail for any musician now is the film and TV sync deals. That's what everyone's after.
Well, I tell everybody, it's probably about 15 years ago. I got contacted. I was living in San Diego, and I got contacted. They had a local film festival, and they said, "Hey, we have all these movie celebrities coming. Can you paint some paintings? We'd like to give the ones that come a painting that you've done, and we'll give you some free passes, and you can go to the parties and hang out with these." And I'm like, "Hey, sign me up! You know, that sounds cool to me." And so it was great, and I made a little bit of money, and it was good. But it really was the first time I had ever been around film like that, like real. Like I had friends that made movies and stuff, but this was like, you know, real stuff. And man, I tell you, the majority of my friends at that point were a lot of musicians, and not at the level like where you're at, but you know, like people starting out. And I told them all, you know, because I went to this thing, and I'm like, you guys need to start going to film festivals. Man, all these movies need music, and I think you're missing it, you know. And, you know, they're all like, who do you think we are, Danny Elfman? I'm like, I don't know. Danny Elfman makes enough. He can do what he wants to do. You know, that might not be. There's way worse targets to, you know.
No, that's what you want to find. I mean, we've had some stuff in British TV, you know, some like soap operas. We've had the music, like if it's playing on like a jukebox. And they will pick up and coming people rather than use those established ones because it's cheaper. But still, for 30 seconds of one of our songs being played, it was £800.
Wow.
You know, so that's why everyone wants to get into it.
That's quite a few meals. That's almost a trip to Portugal with your mom. You know, that's good money.
That guitarist I was telling you about, Kimberly Rue, who wrote Walking on Sunshine, he lives off that song.
Wow.
If he doesn't do anything else, because he came into the studio once when I was in there with Pat, and he said to I'm dipping down shop, he said to see how my little pension is getting on, and that he was talking about the song because that really that's his meal ticket forevermore.
Nice
Yeah,
well, you can't beat it. Hey Neil, I just figured out what the dog was barking about. I'm sitting here and we have these sliding glass doors. My studio is a converted, it started out when this house was built as a garage, and they at some point closed it in, and now it's a big room, but it's my studio where I paint and do the shows and stuff. But anyway, there's some sliding glass doors, and you're not going to believe this. You have another fan here. There's a giant iguana at the sliding glass doors trying to get in.
We'll take anyone we can get.
He loves it, you know.
Right,
I've never seen one do that before.
Right.
Wow. Okay, Mei Ling, I get it. Didn't like him out there. Oh, crazy. Well, it's about that time, and Man, this has been fun. I've had so much fun talking to you today, and I can't wait for the next one. Let me ask you before I let you go. I know we're promoting Big Blue World and whatnot, and that's in our forefront of our thinking. The gears have to be turning for the next project, or for more music. Am I right?
Yeah, well, there's another album coming out in September, October, called The Girl Who Shouted Love at the Heart of the World, and I slightly stole that story from a sci-fi writer called Harlan Ellison, who I'm a big fan of.
Oh, yeah, me too. That's
A Boy and His Dog.
Fantastic film.
The sequel is, the book sequel is coming out to that end of June. I've already ordered it.
Nice.
But, yeah, so we've got an album coming out, again, produced by Pat. Yeah, and, you know, if you... I'd love to talk to you again about
it. Yeah, absolutely. That makes my day, because that means I can have you back on the show, and you know, we've got another excuse, and we'll reminisce about great music and
That's
science fiction, and you know,
I've really enjoyed it. Oh, you're a sci-fi fan.
I'm
a massive sci-fi fan. Yeah,
I'm the same way. Well, you, of course, Barbarella. You know, I mean,
I love all that. I actually bought the French actual comic strip.
Really?
Of that, yeah, the original one that came out in 1960, I think 66, and then they made the film in 68.
Right.
But, you know, there was talk about them, like, doing a TV series of it, but, I mean, if it's not Jane Fonda, I'm not really interested.
Exactly.
I mean, they talked about Anne Hathaway in the part. I mean, my God.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be okay. I'd have to give it a chance, Neil. I'd have to.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
You know.
I force myself.
Exactly. Fantastic. And on that note, folks, you know, I mean, it's hard to have a better note than Anne Hathaway possibly playing Barbarella. Ooh. I'm kidding, kind of. That would be pretty awesome. Anyhow, that was the interview with Neil Fitzsimon and Fitzsimon and Brogan. Man, I had a lot of fun doing this one. I had a lot of fun. And we went a little long, but, you know, hey. That happens. What can I say? This show, of course, has already been converted to a podcast. So this will be out on all the various social media streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts. If you are listening to the show in the future on Apple Podcasts, well, hello from the past. You know, do me a favor, if you can. You know, I was just thinking, actually, Apple Podcasts or any of the other ways the show is played. Streaming. There's a whole bunch of them. But yeah, hello from the past. Do me a quick favor on whatever streaming platform you're listening to the show on. Hit that ratings and review. That helps keep us, on Apple Podcasts, up at the top of the page. And that's pretty awesome. Our sponsors and advertisers and everybody, they dig that, man. They dig that. It makes my life a lot easier as well. So very, very cool. Hit that ratings and review. And of course, get over to the Fitzsimon and Brogan Facebook page, like that. It's very, very important to do this. For those you know, who don't know, that stuff comes into every business meeting and conversation independent artists and filmmakers and everybody trying to do something has with people. So and businesses and record companies and clubs and all that. Very important. If you dig what somebody's doing, like their social media. And, you know, while you're there, hit the share. It doesn't cost anything. Very, very cool. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. And we will be back. Today's Friday. So what am I doing? Am I going to have a show this weekend? No, we don't. I am off doing shows for the weekend. And I got a bunch of stuff to do around here. And, but we'll be back Monday. So very, very cool. We will see you then. Have a great weekend, everybody. Talk to you later. Bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.